Today's daf in Masechet Beitza, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Yud Dalet, and we're holding right at the Halakha Mishnah. So we began discussing some of the inyanim. The fundamental inyanim, of course, that distinguish Shabbos from Yontif are the issue of Malachas Urchol Nefesh and the question about Mitoch. To what extent are we matir those types of Malachas? Yesterday we were talking about the issues that are similar to Disha or to Tchina. And other questions, we started actually a little bit before, but discussing the ways in which we could be chayiv of taking off Truma, which led us to the question of doing things with a Shinui, creating Melilot, even though they could be achieved the day before, differences between Tfua and between legumes, the various types of Kitniot. And today we want to talk about something that happens post that stage. So that was connected the earliest stage of the Disha, of the Zoreh, and of the first stages of separating out with all the toldos of those things of chaff from food, doing it by hand, doing it with a shinui. Today we want to talk about the question of Techina, where we would be the equivalent of making, let's say, flour. The question over here would be things that you couldn't necessarily have done the day before, and that might include crushing spices or crushing salt, that we're going to talk about crushing salt as well, and the idea of a shinui, doing things differently in a way that would make it clear that these are not just blanket aterim, because the Rabbanim didn't allow you to do things that could have been done from the day before. And therefore, sometimes when you do things, they have to be done in a different way than you usually would. So our mission is going to talk about the question of grinding spices or grinding salt. By the way, when we say grinding salt, we don't mean salt that was originally ground and now it just got stuck together because it was exposed to moisture. We're talking about originally rock salt that needs to be pounded in order to break into pieces. Okay, so normally what would we do? Normally we would take a regular mortar and pestle. The mortar would be made out of stone, usually. That's the best kind of natural ingredient to use. And we would also bang on it with a madoch, with a pestle that was made out of stone. So now the question is, what type of shinui would we need for spices? And the difference between spices and the issues that we had started discussing earlier, which was grain. So Beit Shammai Omrim, Tavli Nidochim B'Madoch Shel Eitz. If you're going to crush spices on Yantiv, you have to make a shinui. You cannot use a regular pestle. You'd have to use a wooden pestle, not a strong rock pestle. And on Melach, if you're going to be trying to break up salt, rock salt, that you can't even use wood. What you'd have to use is either a pach, which would mean it's made out of breakable earthenware. Obviously, that's not the kind of thing you would want to do, to be using as mortar. Or what you could do is you could take wood, but not a pestle. You could take like these large spoons, a etza porur. A porur is usually what you use to mix soup with, that you could use. Beit Hillel Omrim, you do not need to make any shinui when it comes to crushing spices. Although I agree with you that you do need to make a shinui for salt. Now, that's a very interesting thing because it opens up now a key to understanding where it is that we are interested in making up shinuyim. So Beit Hillel's lashon is tavlin nidochin kedarkan, without any type of shinui at all, and that would mean even using a madoch shel even, that would be using a stone pestle, which is the way you normally would, and a melach, there I agree, you have to make a difference, and there you would have to use a madoch shel eitz. So he takes it down one level, because according to Beit Shammai, you'd have to use the madoch shel eitz for tavlin. And then when it came to the salt, you wouldn't even be able to use shel eitz. According to Beis Hillel, you use the madoch shel eitz for the salt, but no shinui whatsoever is necessary for the spices. Okay, so now the question is, what is the need for shinui? And here's where we're going to have a good opportunity to talk about this. So apparently both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agree that at least when it comes to the salt, you do need to make a shinui. So what is the reason for the difference between the salt requiring a shinui and the Tavlin not requiring Rishinoi according to Beit Hillel. So here we come to two very important issues that need to be taken into consideration for determining whether Rishinoi is necessary. We don't know who said what, but we do know that Rav Huna and Rav Chisda had each an opinion on this matter. One of them said, well, the reason is because before Yontif, it was obvious that you were going to need salt. Because no matter what it is that you were going to cook on Yontif, you were going to need salt. And therefore, that should have been done before Yontif, because you knew for sure that salt is absolutely necessary. Because of that, we limit your rights to do things on Yontif whenever the same thing could have been achieved without any loss whatsoever before Yontif. Your salt is not going to become less salty because you crushed it before Yontif. That's for sure. Yeah, but that is a different issue. And that issue is the other one. Again, we don't know if it's Rav Huna or Rav Chisda, but the other one says the issue is not whether you knew, but spices, you weren't sure maybe what you were going to cook. But the difference is that spices, even if you knew what you're going to cook, you do not want to crush those spices early, because the earlier you crush them, the less spicy they become. And the more you leave them open, the more worn out the taste gets. And because of that, it's understandable that when it comes to tavlin, we let you do that on Yontif in the normal way, says Beit Hillel, because you want them to be fresh. But what possible reason could there be to have fresh salt? So salt ain't a mefigata amah. So therefore, since the salt should have been done yesterday and it wasn't, therefore the chachamim were mechayev you to do it with a shinui. What's the difference between these two approaches? I can give you a couple of differences in both directions. Let's talk about a case that you had a whole recipe book about what it is that you were going to cook on Yontif. And you knew exactly what spices you were going to need. Then you should have done it before. And then that would mean that even according to Beit Hillel, if the reason is that you didn't know, in this case that you did know, that even Beit Hillel would be maida, that it should have been done before and you'd have to make a shinon. Masha Enkein, according to the other second shot, which is that spices get a little bit worn out, then of course you don't want to do it in Erev Yontif, and therefore Beit Hillel would continue to maintain there's no need for shinoi. There's another difference. For instance, suppose you have a type of spice that does not get worn out. So you're using murica, generally translated as that yellow saffron. Now that doesn't lose flavor. That's makes things very yellow, but doesn't lose any flavor. So therefore, if you didn't know before Yontif that you were going to cook something that required any of your murica, so then you'd be allowed to cook it because you didn't know about it before. Mashenkin, according to the second Lashon, since murica is like salt in terms of not losing its flavor, it still should have been done before, and Beis Hillel would have been modeh that there is a necessity to make a shinun. On Revit on Meshua, a general comment that Shmuel made, which doesn't make any sense at all in light of this Mishnah, is that anything that needs crushing on Yontif can be crushed in the normal way. So Nidochin Kidarkan, I don't care what it is, even if it's Melach. What in the world? I mean, didn't we just go through that no matter how you understand the Mishnah, all of the Tanayim of the Mishnah say that Melach does need to be different. How does Shmuel Paskin not like Beit Hillel and not like Beit Shammai? Ah, because Shmuel has a different version than our Mishnah does in the Machlokes Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And he is going according to the following Tana, which is a completely different approach, the Tanya, Amar Rabbi Meir. It's not true that there was a Machlokes Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about spices that you are allowed to crush them or not. Everybody agrees you are allowed to crush them. And not only that, you're allowed to crush the melach together with them, as long as you're not crushing the melach separately. Even there, Beit Shammai was modeh that you do not need to make any kind of shinui, because of the fact that anyway you're doing the proper type of crushing when it came to the spices, if you throw in some salt, that's fine. The machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel only refer to the case when you're crushing salt all on its own. And over there, Beit Shammai says, if you're going to be using crushing salt, then you have to make a shinoi, either using a pach or an etz haparur. That's in the event also that you're limiting the amount of salt Because listen, guys, you should have taken care of this yesterday. So we're going to limit you in two ways. First of all, we're going to limit you in the way that you can do this. Secondly, we're going to limit you in the amount of salt that you can do. So you can take a little bit of salt to make a barbecue, to make a roast, which doesn't require a lot of salt. But when it comes to doing the kedera, where you need tons of salt, all that kosher salt and stuff, forget it. In that case, Beit Shammai says, you can't even do that amount at all. I don't care how you crush it. That should have been done yesterday. Whereas Beit Hillel says, you can use anything you want. Now that is very suspicious. You can use anything you want. You certainly can't use anything you want. I mean, there are things that are going to be muktzah on Shabbos. You shouldn't use them. Something's wrong with the language. It's not the way that Beit Hillel would have said it. So surely you don't mean bichol davar. No, sorry. I meant lichol davar. No, but according to Beit Hillel, the only limitation was that you could crush it, even tons of it. That there was no limitation of how much you're allowed to use. That's the point. So then that means, according to Beit Hillel, since we're still arguing about whether you need to make a shinui at all, Gabi Melach, that part is still true. And you do not need to make a shinui, and you do not need to make a shinui in the amount either. So according to Beit Hillel, no shinui is required. That's why Shmuel said you can use whatever you want, meaning as much as you want in whatever normal kind of meducha, because according to the way we just read it, that's exactly the case. Aliba the Rebbe Meir, in his understanding of the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and that clarifies the other approach. So it means we have basically three approaches here. Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, Beit Hillel, Aliba the Rebbe Meir. Omar le Rav Acha bar Gamliel livrei. Rav Acha bar Gamliel told his son, let me just tell you something. The halacha, it's true that Shmuel is really right. And you can use even a stone mortar. You can use it as much as you want for salt. I still hold, however, that that's only in terms of a major shinui. You don't have to change the kli. But the mode in which you use the kli, that should be changed. So if normally you would use it by facing directly downwards and pounding, you should make a shinui by holding it a little bit on its side and pounding, which is not as efficient. And that's why you're making the distinction between something that should have been done before Yantiv, and next time you'll be sensitive, and something that you needed to do on Yantiv. So actually, bend it over a little bit and pound it with the edge of the mortar rather than directly on the big surface. Rav Sheshet. And this relates to what we just said, because Rav Sheshet was walking down one day, it was on Yantiv, and he hears the sound of a normal buchna, which is a stone mortar, a small one, but it's a stone mortar. And it was crushing salt. And Gemara's going to say, how does he know it was crushing salt? But he knew it was crushing salt. So he says, well, of course, his kids were all around listening to what he said. Well, that's certainly not coming from my house. I mean, I told them never to use that, because I would have told them not to do salt crushing the way they normally do. Well, how does he know? Maybe they weren't doing it the way they normally do it. Maybe they had, in fact, bent it on its side to make that minor shinui that we just spoke about. No, come on, man. You think Rav Sheshet doesn't know the difference between the sound of a mortar that's being banged straight and the sound of a mortar that's on its side? He heard that it was a very clear sound. When you're banging the mortar down, it makes a clear sound. When you hold it on the side, then the reverberations stop because of the pressure against the edge. And that way it would have sounded muffled. He didn't hear any sign of muffling, so he said it couldn't be from my house. Okay, even so, I mean, maybe they were crushing spices. I thought we said that when it comes to tavlin, that there's no need to make a shinui at all. So what would be wrong with doing the tavlin? Nah, come on. You think Rav Sheshet doesn't know the difference between the sound that the mortar makes when it's crushing tavlin or crushing salt? When you crush tavlin, it goes, as Rashi says, crunch. So the sound of the crunching, which is the various seeds that are each one of them makes this little crunch sound, as you get it, you never get that sound in salt, and that crunchy sound shot from guns. Anyway, that crunchy sound that they put on the ads for the tavlin, that Rav Sheshet did not hear, and so he knew they must have been using salt, and he knew they didn't put it on its side, and so he wanted to make a comment to make it very clear, this could not be coming out of my home.
Anyway, maybe it's after Rav Sheshet who was blind and therefore had a heightened sense of hearing.
Very good indeed. Excellent, undoubtedly. Tanya Rabbana. So now the question is like this. We've been talking about salt, we've been talking about the question about the spices, but what about if you actually have grain? We were talking, until now, the Mishnah before was talking about grain to be mimolel, which would mean to rub it with your fingers to make the shell fall off. By the way, there's just a very interesting shot. I just mentioned it because it's cute, which is mi yimalel gvurot Hashem. Well, over there, the pashtus is malel, of course, is for lashon milah, right? To say the words. But remember that milah also means to cut off and to separate, right? So then that meant not only that, but it's the same otiot as pet, which is pei hei. So that's why we have milat halashon. Somebody wants to speak clearly, so we talk about that. It's not orlat lashon. Orlat lashon is that you don't, that's the orlat peh, Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So all of these things interrelate, mila and peh and speaking and mimalel to break apart. So the Hasidic Shabbat, mimalel gvurot Hashem, is not who can say, but rather who could detail the various levels of issues that you need to be sensitive in all of the teva and chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for you. You just have this general sense, but all of the amazing hundreds of millions of issues, we talked about this, we spoke about the Eben Ezra, who says, what a bunch of liars, the people who say that there's more klolas than there are brachas in the Torah. Because that one bracha, that you'll be well, includes about 200 quintillion different issues, that if you were mimalel, each one of them, you would be able to be mimalel gvurot Hashem all day and all night for the rest of your life. Okay, so anyway, getting to the simple meaning of it, getting back, we were talking about mimalel beforehand, and now we're talking about crushing. Now, you certainly can't crush your grain in the normal way in a regular mortar. I mean, that's mamish, the very thing that it was never mutter for you, lechora, which we said before is going to be a deraisa. We're going to need to distinguish what type of things indeed remain osur on yontif, even though there obviously are tzarech al chodat v'shtet. How to define that is a big machlokas rishoni. But anyway, suppose you want to make cereal. Now, there were three types of cereal that were made out of completed grain. And that was, the grain was already done. So we did the disha, so on and so forth. There were three levels, and they were actually called tisne, chilka, and daisa. What we call daisa is the cereal which they sell over. Essentially, is what they call Quaker. You know, kvaker became Quaker wheat, became a Hebrew word, of course. Kvaker. That's because the front axle also became known as the front rear axle, because the rear axle was the only axle that they knew. But anyway, all of this is sort of the strangeness of modern Hebrew. But the daisa. You'll notice that the daisa, if you take an actual piece of that stuff, it is a piece of crushed grain that has been broken up into basically two big pieces. So when you crushed it, you crushed down around the cracked, and now it's crushed. And there were other ways that they would also make. They would make actually chilka, and they would make tisni. Tisni was made into even four pieces. Chilka was made into three pieces. So these were different levels of crushing these type of dry cereals. And because of that, we say you can't make tisni. So tisni is a very complex one that you have to bang until it breaks to four parts. And you can't crush in a mortar at all, is what it's saying, seems to be saying, which makes absolutely no sense. I mean, those two things can't both be true. Tarte? I mean, you're telling me two contradictory statements and you're pretending this supposed to make some sense? If you told me you can't take tisni, so what you were saying is, but you can make daisa, right? Or you can make chilka. And then you come along and you say, well, you can't use a mortar at all. I mean, that's crazy. So then you can't make any cereals. What are you talking about? No, you don't understand. What it was saying was, Arfikama, why can you not make tisni? Lefisha ain't kochim, because you're not allowed to use a mortar. So then you understand yourself that you can't make anything. What? So then why talk about tisni, for God's sake? Just say you can't use a mortar. No, that's clear. That's impossible if that's the pshat. No, it's not. Because if I would have told you don't use a mortar, you might have thought that meant a normal mortar. A makdashat gedola. So that would be like a really big thing that you normally use for grain. But you'd say to yourself, okay, but if I'm using a makdash ktana, I use like this, a small spice mortar, and I use that to crush the grain into cereal, then that should be okay. That's what you might think. Therefore, I want to say, no, don't use that makdash at all. Kamash malan. Yeah, but that's not the pshat, because there's another braita that says prefers not like that. It says, ain kochim makdash gdola, avokain kochim makdash ktana. That just is the opposite of what you're saying. That you really are allowed to use a makhteshet ktana, and now you're saying, no, you cannot use any type of makhteshet. Okay, so let's scratch what we just said. Let's try a new approach that will make the statement make sense. Omer Abaye, in the first braita that we just said, it does not mean you can't make tisni because you can't use a makhteshet. That was a wrong explanation. I'm changing my mind, and it's saying two completely different things. You can't make tisni because it's too much tircha, even for a small mortar. And then anything else you could make in a small mortar, but you can't use ever a large mortar. That's the pshat. But you could make chilka and daisa in a chinam. You just cannot make tisni when it comes to grain. That's what I would recommend, says Abaye. Rava says, you don't have to say that. You can make perfectly good sense with the first approach. It actually was an explanation. The way that you said, and you're right, that we're going to have to make it work into the way that the second brisa says, that it's mutter in a small machtesha. And nonetheless, it's not a question, because it depends where you are. Halon, the second brisa that says you can use a small machtesha, that is talking about people who live in Bava. And the first brisa, that's talking about people who live in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what is the difference between those locations? So Rashi gives a very strange explanation. However, we'll see that the strange explanation actually pops up in a slightly different context in the Gemara later. So it's not as strange as it would seem. But Rashi says that basically there shouldn't be any Isser. Why would we answer if you're using only a Machteshet Ktana? Problem is that in Eretz Yisrael, people had a lot of use of servants, which they did not have in Bavel, and because of that, they could not trust the servants, and they would use a big machteshet, and then they would claim that they used a small machteshet. So because of that, in order to avoid using a machteshet at all, that indeed is the first braita. Don't use a machteshet at all if you live in Eretz Yisrael. The second braita says you can. There's where we can trust the people who are doing the work, and they're using only a machteshet ketana. So it was a difference in the level of trusting servants. That's how Rashi learns. The Rambam learns that in Eretz Yisrael, the food quality is high. And because of that, you do not need to use a machteshet. It's such high quality grain that it's very easy to work with. So what do I need this big banging for? And so not necessary. The Rivet says the difference is that in Bavel, remember the way that we used to make fun of Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, that these creeps, they eat their bread with cereal. And so they eat bread with bread. I mean, they can't even understand that it's all the same thing. What are they just playing around with tastes where you're basically getting the exact same nourishment? This is considered to be human. Anyway, so this is the way they used to make fun of Bava, but that means that they required a lot of the daisa. So for them, it was mutter to use the small machteshet. Mashenken Eretz Yisrael, they didn't do without daisa if you didn't make it yesterday. What the heck? How many people eat daisa? Anyway, Maisa Shahaya was that Rav Papi came to Mar Shmuel's house on Yantav, and they bring him daisa, and he refused to eat it. Because it had come from, the Gemara's going to ask how he knew, but it had been done on Yontif. Well, so, I mean, this is in Bava, so maybe they used this Machteshet Ketana. But we said Machteshet Ketana is Mutra on Yontif. He saw, Rav Papi, that it was very finely crushed. And it was finely crushed, they must have used the Machteshet Gedola. Okay, but how do you know they did it today? I mean, they bring him some cereal, he knows when they made it. Maybe they made it yesterday. So why should it be cheshin then? That's because the Chazid Avi Kolev Tziare, he saw that it looked like it had these white streaks in it, which means it had just been processed. So he refused to eat it because he held it was usher. Or I could tell you another pshat. It could be that maybe they did make it in a small bakhteshet. And afal pi ken he refused to eat it. Now here's the makor for Rashi's approach. The reason he wouldn't eat it, because Rav Papi held that in Marshmuel's house, where Rav Shmuel was very rich, and they had a lot of avanim, and these avanim were pritsuse de avde, they would never listen to what she told them, they would lie, and they would do anything, even if it wasn't kosher to do, and so on. So because of that, he was sure that you couldn't use any kind of makhtesha, because for them, they would use a makhtesha gedola, and they would claim it's a makhtesha ketana, so memela, he held it for Marshmuel. Indeed, it was us. There it does have to do precisely with the question of the avanim. Boy, I could tell you, man, when I was a mashgiach on that boat across the Atlantic, you have no idea the amount of sheker. It's truly staggering what it is that these avanim will do and the extent. I mean, these were Greeks, but I'm sure it doesn't matter very much. And the extent that they will cover up their lies is absolutely beyond belief. You know, I'm embarrassed to say how long it took me to figure out that they were repainting red or blue the different kalim that I had so carefully made milchiks and fleishiks until I found that fresh paint underneath one of the cabinets because it felt, forget it. You can't trust these guys for nothing. I can tell you that much. Anyway, we're ready for Sir Richard. Lovely. And so I see the boat really turned you back on again. You just need to make the mention. And we already get the full scale. And this is what I've always felt that we need to do for Richie.
Sail away, sail away.
Haborer kitniot biyantum. So now, suppose you've got like you usually mix, you know, some peas or something, and there's a lot of need to separate out the little pieces where you bake beans or stuff like that, and you want to separate out the solet from the ochel. So what do you do? So Beit Shammai says, basically what you normally do. You know, you separate the food out of the psolet. You can't take the psolet out of the food because, according to Beit Shammai, borer is an isser on yontif, and therefore you have to do it the way that you would do it on Shabbos, which is the ochel mitocha psolet, and you have to do it immediately before you eat, and you have to do it by hand. You can't use any of the kalim and so on. So he treats borer as one of the malachas that would be usser on yontif. Whereas Beit Hillel says, makes absolutely no difference, and you can simply do it kidarko, whatever way you would normally do it. You could take out even the psolet from the ochel. You can do it b'cheiko. B'cheiko means like this big towel on your lap, and you're doing a lot at a time, and you're able to spread them out, and so on. Now, that's the normal way that you would do it. B'chol, it's not the way you would do it on Shabbos. Shabbos, it would be yisr. You can use a kanun and a tamchui. The kanun, remember, was that funnel-like thing that you pass it through, and then only the chaff can pass through. The other stuff remains. I think it's called chaff also, even on legumes, right? Am I right about that, Ira? You know what it's called when it comes to legumes? You're going to have to start raising hummus so that we can have some really fresh hummus now. Then we would be able to know these words exactly. But you cannot use a real, it has to be some kind of shinui, even according to Beit Hillel. So this, of course, would only be minarabanan, because why did they make that gezerah? Because since those are things that usually you process a tremendous amount at a time, and that you're not allowed to do, because it would only be mamish, your ochel nefesh, the rabbanan answered anything that looks like you're processing a lot. So because of that, don't use the tabla. The tabla was the big board that you spread out the whole thing. And don't use a nafar, kvara, a sifter, a sieve. I mean, that looks like you got a whole pile of this stuff. Don't do that. Rebbe Gamliel Omer, but what you could do is you could do the skim trick. You know, you put water in it, all the stuff rises to the top, which, you know, we do when we're checking barley and stuff like that. And then you simply skim off all the stuff that is possible. Tanya, Omer Rebbe Gamliel. Another thing that Rebbe Gamliel talks about over here, like Abi Basil Shita, says this whole discussion, Bamedvarim Amurim, is where the Ocha was Meruba al Apsole. So if you've got more food, then you have pisolet. So then It's true that it's less of a tircha to take out the psoet. And there was, that's where Beit Hillel says you can do it either way you want. What's the difference? But if the psoet is meruba al ha'ochel, so then everybody's made it that on tircha issues. When it comes to doing things with tircha, forget about the way in which you do the bora. Remember that we've seen so many times, we're interested in being mamayat tircha on yantin. And therefore, since in doing it the normal, what you're calling the normal way, which would be, in a case, you don't have so much junk, and you have all of this junk, you're going too much tircha, everybody is beta. Just leave the psalat behind, take out the ochel, and that's less tircha. Says the Gemara, in a case we've got psalat meruba ala ochel, why would anybody be mad to you to touch it, Bichlal? I mean, that's just not mukts, it's all psalat, basically. Even the food should be bottled to it. At least that's how some learn, which is very, very difficult to believe. We're going to be mevatel food to psalat. Some of the Rishonim come up with different explanations, but this is the pashtus of the Mefarshim on the Daf, and that it must be talking about over here when we talk about more or less. We don't mean more or less in amount. We mean more or less tircha. That's what we meant. So lo tzricha the nafish b'tircha, there's greater tircha, but less amounts. When it comes to the question of bittel, it's not going to be a problem of bittel, but we want to make sure that we do that which is less tircha. Now, the next thing that Rabbi Gamliel said in the Mishnah is you could even use the skimming off approach by putting on water on it, and the Braita goes into the details. Tanya Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok. Kacha yamin hagansha beit Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel actually used to use this all the time as the way that they would clean their legumes. And you may be in dilim alayad Hashem. It being a bucket full. Oh, there we go. Barney has got a bucket full of different colored adashim. I think they're both adashim. Different colored adashim. And now he's going to clean them for us and then make us. Wait a minute. What? I can't believe it. All of these shortcuts. So then we fill it up with water and all of the little pieces of straw and anything left over rises to the top and mitzifina lav mayim. And then that would mean that the ochel remains down on the bottom because it's heavier. The psolet floats up to the top, and then you skim it off. What? But what about the braita that says to do it the opposite way than Barnea does it? It says over there that the dirt would go to the bottom and that you skim off the food. Depends what you're talking about. You're talking about dirty lentils that have dirt ground in it. Okay, so then obviously that's heavier than the lentil. So then you mish it up in the water and the lentils come to the top and the dirt and stones, that stays on the bottom. The first thing we were talking about is where you've got straw and light things like that. So over there you don't put in the water with a lot of pressure. The lentils stay on the bottom, the junk rises up, and then you take it off. Now today, Richie is on overtime, which is why it was important to establish that he was having a good time so that he doesn't attempt to collect more than his normal salary here. Go for it, Sir Richard.
Bill, at the end of the month,
I'll... Yeah, no, I figured. I'll just give extra of capital. Richie, you can't hide it. You're having fun. The next Mishnah. Now we have a different issue. What kind of food can you be toreach to send to your friends on Yantav? So here too, it's got to be something that is usable on Yantav. So Beit Shammai Omrim, Emesh Alchim B'Yom Tov Elamanot. Use things that you're going to be eating today, not things that are long-term efforts or hotzah that weren't needed for Yantav. So Beit Hillel says, oh, you don't have to be cooked and ready to eat. You could send them anything that is edible today. So like behema, chaya, oaf, even if it's alive. I mean, the guy could shecht it, and then it's fresh, and he'll be able to cook it today. And you could send wine, you could send oil, you could send flour, fine flour. You could send kitniot. The one thing is that you can't send actually grain. Why? Because what are you going to do with it? Not allowed to grind it. We talked about before tchina. So the usage is so limited. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you could even send grain because, I mean, we said there are ways to use the grain. We're talking about the daisa and stuff like that. So a little bit of grain is not really a problem. And therefore, whatever shinoi you would use for the Tana Kamot, since it's not normal, so to count on the shinoi to be the thing which is going to say this is edible on Yontif, that we don't do. If you have it, you can use the shinoi, but it doesn't define availability. Tani Rebbe Yechiel, when we say that you could send all of this good stuff on Ribbit of Beisilal, you still cannot make it seem like you're going to be making a major Sa'udah and have a bunch of people carrying it one after the other, and everybody's got this on their head, you know, they're coming down the street, because then it looks like they are going to the shuk. Tana ein shura p'chuta mishlosha b'nei adam. Remember that we have this same idea about asking mechila from somebody who died, the same idea of a shura, to have said shura b'nei of chaverot and so on, to ask mechila. Boy Ravash, how about if you got three people, each of whom is holding something else, completely different type of thing? So, I mean, then it doesn't really look like they're all going together to market something, and so that would be okay. Or do we go according to the total number of people that are making the tumult over here, and people don't look up closer? So what are all these people carrying baskets for? They're going to market on Yom Tov. Taker. Reb Shimon, the last thing we said, is, by the way, the teku stands, even Bisman Hazeh. It's a big machlokas as we showed it. Rabbi Shimon Matir Bitvua. Tani. Rabbi Shimon Matir Bitvua. Why? What do you mean, why? There's always things to make. If you send chitin, you could always make ludiot, which I have absolutely no idea what they are, but there's some type of direct ma'achal that you can make out of chitin without needing to do processing. Sa'orim, he could use the sa'orim to feed to his animal. They love sa'orim. You could give him lentils, because for that he could make risisin, which are perfectly edible. Richie, you're back on, man.
I don't know if I can take this pace.
It's amazing pace. Whip me up.
Good thing I'm not davening for Yom Kippur. So the Halakha Mishnah.
So, wonderful. How about clothes? Can you send clothes? Oh, you can send clothes even if they're not sewn. What are you going to do with clothes that aren't sewn? Bein tvorim, bein she'enon tvorim. As a matter of fact, you could even send clothes that have kelayim in them. Why? Because bein tzorach hamoed, as long as you're going to use it, what are you going to do with them if they're kelayim? But you cannot send a sandal hamisumar. That's a spiked shoe, which, remember, we have a special gzeira. You're not allowed to wear those kind of shoes because they caused a tragedy on one Shabbos when the people were hiding out from their enemies and they made a mistake and thought that someone had come in, and they ended up panicking and killing each other because of these spikes on the shoes, trying to climb over each other. Because of that, in memory of that meora, they asered wearing such shoes on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that you can't send. And you cannot send a shoe that hasn't been sewn together, which again seems rather obvious. What are you going to do with it? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, you can't even send a completed shoe if it's white and it hasn't been blackened by the smithy yet. B'nei she'tzarech oman, you need a professional to be able to turn that black. Zach Klau, look, basically the idea is anything that you can use, you can send. Koshe ne'otim bo. The question is how to read this, as we'll see later on in the Masechet. But Parshas means anything you could use on Yontif, Mishalchinoto, for Yontif. So now I understand that you can send clothes. Well, obviously, I mean, a guy's going to wear clothes, but what good are unsewn clothes? So Bishlam Tfurim, well, that's very usable for wearing. I could even understand why you would use unsewn clothes, because they're still usable as blankets. You cover yourself up with it. But Kelayim, what are you going to do with Kelayim? Now, I know what you'll tell me. You'll tell me, Kelayim, what you could do is you could make a seat. You know, so you fold it up, you put it down on your hard stool, and then you sit down on the Kelayim. But that's wrong, because of Tanya. It says, goof about the Pasuk, Beged Kelayim Shatnez lo ya'ale alecha, should not go on top of you. That seems to mean that it would be okay to use it as a mat of some kind. What do you call that? As a chair, a cushion of some kind, right? For your chair. However, and that's true theoretically, meaning you're right, Ava, Amru Chachamim Asur La'asot Ken. You cannot use it as a cushion for a chair, Because we're worried, Shemati Karech Lo Nima Al Bisaro, we're worried that a thread will maybe come around, and as you're sitting on the chair, you're pushing up against your nice soft cushion, a little thread will wrap around your finger, and that will perform a little bit of warming. Rashi is an alternative, which is that once the beged itself is chashav, so then the fact that even a small thing is on you, even if it doesn't achieve anything for you, is like wearing that beged. So that would still be alecha. That's an alternative. But Rashi brings both possibilities. So anyway, so you'll tell me. What are you going to tell me? Make a cushion out of it, but cover it with plastic. So that way you've got these nice cushions. They're soft, but there's no chance that anything's going to get onto your thumb because it's covered with plastic, right? So v'chite min amafsik mini bini bini. But the problem is that Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi quoted Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and he was quoting Rabbi Yossi ben Shol, who was quoting Rebbe, who was quoting this as an ancient minhag of Yerushalayim, that even if you've got 10 cushions, one on top of the other, and there is no possible way that you are ever going to be nene directly from the cushion of Kilayim, you still cannot keep Kilayim on the bottom. And Kilayim tachteyam, osur lishon aleyam, you cannot use them. That's the wrong pasuk. You have to take it out. Okay, so maybe what it's talking about. You can send, the question whether you could send Kilayim is to use as a vilon. So a vilon, in other words, something you could put up along your doorway, and then it provides, Barnea is giving us just in case you don't know what a vilon is, Barnea has a vilon, but the real truth is, it's a Kilayim vilon, which means that it's probably going to have to tear it down now, according to what we're just going to read. So that's probably why he showed
first, it was a curtain call. Now it's curtains.
Hey, we have to put up some stage lights and stuff in Barnea's house just to get the full effect. Anyway, so maybe it's talking about a vilon. And over there in vilon, you don't have to worry about Kilayim. But the truth is, you do have to worry about Kilayim because, as Ula pointed out, we had, remember, the din about a vilon being mekabel tuma, and Ula said, so why in the world would a vilon be mekabel tuma? It should have a din of the bayit, because it's like bottle to the walls of the bayit, right? And he answered, mipnei shehashamash mitchamim kinegdo, because you've got a butler who's standing up there in the middle of the night and his teeth are chattering and you're not looking. He takes the vilon and he wraps it around himself a little bit. So people do use a vilon as a covering because that will not be bottle to the actual house. So, okay, you know what it's talking about? It's talking about Kilayim. It's talking about a Borsellino hat kind of thing. So those kind of things are so stiff and hard that over there, there wouldn't be a problem. So at least you could sit on them, which is what most people do with those hats nowadays. And that way, there would be no chashash that it would be aser. Like what Ravuna said. Ravuna Rebbe Yeshua said that the famous Namta Gamda Narish, that's the kind of hard felt that they manufacture in Narish. That's why so many people make fun of those hats, a bunch of Narish titans. So that type of thing is Sharia, it's mutter. And that leads us to one other issue, which Rav Papa says, what about Ardalayim? Of course, today we use Ardalayim in modern Hebrew for rubber rain shoe covers. In those days, the Ardalayim were used under your sock, between your sock and your shoe. So anyway, those are not considered to be Kilayim because they're very hard. Omar Rava. There's other things that are not a problem. Let's say bags that you're going to use for storing coins in. So you can make them out of Kilayim because we're not chashish that you're ever going to put it on you. Let's say you put it down on your beged or while you're sitting, you put it on your lap. It's not going to be usur because the very fact that you keep coins in it makes it so hard if with all of the dirt on it. If all these kind of things that are used for storage of those type of things, they always get very dirty and hard. And the same, therefore there's no Kilayim. But if you're going to be using it for holding seeds, now over there, Yeshvem Mishum Kilayim, that is actually usable for warming your lap. Rav Ashi says neither of them, because that's not the normal way. And it's something that is not the normal way, we're not gozer on the Kilayim. But you cannot use a sandal on a sumer, and we remember the mice of the sandal on the sumer, which we'll talk about tomorrow, and that was the sandal on the sumer, Mishum Maaseh Shehayah.